Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners, to another episode with me, Mackenzie Tiggs. I have Brandon Barnes on with us today, prior baseball like star. I'm so privileged to have you on. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, played professional baseball for 16 years. I'd say I played baseball for 3 decades. You know, I started when I was 4 years old, something that I absolutely loved. It was a passion since the moment I can remember. I was a football player as well, and we can kind of dive into that. My initial passion and goal was to play in the NFL. Didn't happen, and we'll get into that later. But, yeah, I played 16 years of professional baseball, parts of 6 years in the major leagues, 10 years in the minor leagues with Houston, Colorado, Cleveland Indians, and I played over a year in South Korea, which was awesome, by the way. And now I've relocated my family to the Treasure Valley.
Yeah.
And got into real estate out here and enjoying life. And there's so many different moving pieces in my life, but I'm so blessed.
That's cool. That is cool. I want to really dive into your baseball career because that is a lot of years physically, mentally, time away from your family, trying to build a family. Like, what was kind of your journey within all of that realm?
Yeah, that's a
loaded question. I know
it's a huge question because there's so much packed in there. So I could take it back to like high school. I was a highly recruited football player, and I didn't come from much. You know, my parents were divorced. I think they divorced when I was like 11 years old. So I went through that, and I knew, you know, my parents were single parents at the time on their own, and they were grinding and struggling and just, you know, living that California lifestyle where everything is way more expensive everywhere. And they just worked hard. And I got to see that firsthand of the sacrifices they made for me to be able to play sports as a kid, go to school, you know, have those things that they wanted me to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that at a very young age, the work ethic, the hard work that my parents put in. But at the same time, like I wasn't the same person when that happened, right? Mm-hmm. So you deal with some trauma as a kid, but I really knew going into high school that I was a above average athlete. And the only way for me to get to college, because my parents couldn't pay for it, was a scholarship. So I took that mentality of like, I'm going to go hard for 4 years and whatever happens, happens. Like, I've got to get a scholarship because I need to go to college. And my goal was to play either in the major leagues or play in the NFL. And I remember going to my junior year of football. I just finished my sophomore year on varsity. I got to play both ways, which was awesome. And I started getting letters from colleges. As a junior in high school, you know, I had USC, UCLA, Colorado, Colorado State. I even had like Brown, Yale, Harvard. And I was like, this is going to go to the side. I don't have grades to go there. I was strictly a athlete. I wasn't a student athlete. It was something that I thank my teachers to this day for helping me out. I had to take an extra math class my senior year when most kids were gone after like fifth period. I was struggling, grinding out. But I went from having like no scholarship offers to my junior year having all these schools reach out, being, I think I was the number one safety or number two safety in Southern California. Led the conference in interceptions, and I was like, it's happening. I went into my senior year, had another great year, tons of colleges. I was looking at going to, I had two schools at the top of my mind. It was either Colorado State or it was UCLA. Being a Southern California kid, I was like, I want to be a Bruin. Like, that's where I've always dreamt of being. And so I did a verbal commit and quit baseball my senior year of high school. Did not play.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going all in. Like, I'm going to get bigger, faster, stronger. I remember taking my recruiting trip to UCLA and Adrian Peterson being there. And this kid's 6'2", 220 pounds, runs like the wind. And I was like, this guy's going to kill me. So I was like, I'm going to get bigger, faster, stronger. The work ethic was there. Like, it's going to happen. And I remember right before baseball season, UCLA had a coaching change. And they brought in a new coach. And since I was only verbally committed, he decided to cut my scholarship, that verbal commit. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Like, I'd worked my whole life to get to this point, to go to college, have a full ride scholarship, and it just be taken right from underneath me. And so I did what any athlete would do, is I just kept working. I ended up going to a junior college to start working out for football just so I can transfer out real quick, and ended up playing in a baseball tournament with a bunch of my buddies, and we ended up going to the World Series. I hit 8 home runs in 10 games, and my buddy's like, you need to play baseball.
Yeah.
And so I decided that day to quit football. And I went and prayed and thought about it and was like, if this is what I need to do, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And so I went online, signed up for a new college that was strictly like, it was like one of the best Southern California junior college baseball programs. And I didn't even have a tryout to get on the team. I just had a buddy who said he would work on it. I was like, cool, I'll take that leap of faith.
Yeah.
I'm all about it. And so I ended up getting the tryout, killed it. And they held me on for the fall, killed it, made the team, and then just balled out the rest of the year and ended up being drafted in the 6th round by the Houston Astros, which was an absolute blessing because at 4 years old through like 12, I was like, I'm going to be a Major League Baseball player. This is all I want in life. And it happened. And I remember signing that contract and just having tears in my eyes with my family and my grandfather. And it was just a cool moment because it came to fruition. And that's kind of where the real grind and the icky, like, just nasty stuff came, because there's so much transition. I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. And I had been with my now wife since I was 18. So she's rode this roller coaster with me the entire time. And she's been by far my biggest supporter. And I'm just blessed to have her a part of it. But, yeah, I ended up signing that contract with the Houston Astros and then playing 16 more years professionally.
What is it like, mentality-wise, where it's like all of these other kids are kind of fucking around, right? Going to college, drinking, partying, like, and you were like, no, I'm dead set on this.
Yeah, I wish I could say that, but I was a bad kid. Like, not a lot of people know this about me, and I'm going to throw this out there, but I was arrested twice before I was 18 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. There's some people in my life. There's actually quite a few people that are close to me that know these stories. People in my church know these stories. But, I was arrested twice, got into a huge altercation. It was actually over my wife, who dated one of my best friends in high school for like a month.
Did you beat
him up? No, it was actually, we were going to fight people that she was hanging out with. And ended up, there was a really bad assault where this kid got his skull fractured. And so we got pulled over on the side of the highway, arrested.
Wow.
And I had a full ride scholarship to UCLA at the point, and I was freaking out. So that was the first time. The other one was I was young, dumb, and had no money and thought that I can grab a couple things and make it work. And that alarm went off, and I got handcuffed, arrested, and put in a little cell. So that was the point where I really turned my life around. I gave my life to Christ and was born again, and said, I need to make a change, or I'm going to throw away what is being gifted to me. And so I decided to really hone in. But to your point, yes, there was a point where I said in high school, my senior year, like, I'm not fucking around anymore. Like, I'm going all in. And there's no quit, and this is gonna happen. There's no maybe, like, it's gonna happen.
There's no backup plan.
Yeah, and that's what I talk to a lot of guys about these days. Is, you know, we get into a little bit of my coaching, but I always thought that having plan B was a bad thing, because there was always like, oh, I could just fall back on this. Mm-hmm. But it's just setting yourself up for an injury, or setting yourself up for when you get released, or, you know what, I played 16 years. I already have that backup plan, so now it's in place. Now I could just roll into the next thing. I didn't have that, because I went with the mentality of no backup plan. This is going to happen, and it's got to happen.
And how did that serve you?
It served me pretty well until the day that I played my last game, and I had no freaking clue what I was doing and what I wanted to do. Because my identity was so wrapped up in being a baseball player for 30 years. It was crazy. I cried, you know, big tough guy. No, I cried. I sat there and wrote my my little retirement speech on Instagram, and just remember sitting in my car by myself and just like crying because the memories, the good times, but like, what the hell is next? Like, I have a wife and three kids to take care of, and I didn't set myself up to like just roll into the next thing. That was the scariest part.
Yeah. And is that what you coach athletes now on doing?
Yeah, is kind of finding out where you want to be in 10 years and making it happen, like reverse engineering it and finding out whether it's financially, whether it's a job, or it's how I want to spend time with my family. We kind of intertwine everything, but it's where you want to be. Let's get there. Let's run the numbers. Let's find a passion. I have a little blueprint that I give guys to fill out, to find out what their passions are away from the game, because our whole lives, it's like my only passion is playing baseball. And so I really try to dig into their brain before we even get started.
Yeah. And I love you talking about, you know, almost that identity crisis, because I think this is something that a lot of people have when they have put in everything in their title, whatever that may be, corporate, first responders, you as an athlete, like you have put in so much identity to baseball player. And who was Brandon outside of being a baseball player?
I don't know. Still figuring it out. It took moving to Idaho to get away from my past, to get away from the things I was comfortable in, getting away from the baseball world. I don't watch baseball. I don't follow baseball. I follow my buddies who are still playing, but to me, it's something I did. It's not who I am. And that's how I live now. And for a long time, I'd say for about 2 years, it was still who I was. It was just trying to find what's next. And I've had some help, whether it be people at church, my best friend who I work with, my wife, you know, having those tough conversations like, you got to figure it out, because I've got three kids to feed. I've got a wife to take care of. I've got a house to keep over my family. You know, you got everyday bills, and those are real things that I have as a man. Like, I take those responsibilities. I want those responsibilities because that's what I felt like I was put here to do, is to take care of my family and to be the best that I can be, whether it's in baseball or post-transition life, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. When you talk about figuring it out, and I think so many of us have a different context to that, but also sometimes don't know the how-tos, like the action items to figuring it out. What are some that you used to help you find your purpose again after kind of having that, you know, identity crisis of like, what is next?
Yeah, man, I think the biggest thing was finding out what I messed up. Like, I looked at my career and I made, and you can look this up, but anybody, I don't not tell people because it's an easy Wikipedia or Google search, but I made upwards of $2 million in my career, and I had zero to show for it because I lived the lifestyle. I lived, you know, Louis Vuitton belts and bags, and bought my wife this. We bought cars every year. We had a huge house. I had a mortgage at home that was $3,400. I had a rent in Denver that was $3,200. I was just living the life. I was young and making good money. And so I was like, I'm going to keep making it. Like, this is never going to end. And I realized when I got out of the game that I should have set myself up. And one thing I really looked at is when I got into real estate is, how could I have built wealth to where I didn't have to work when I was done with the game? And so I started looking at like, well, man, I was making this amount of money a month. If I would have just put in some of that and bought in a rental or an investment property or a multifamily, and when I'd have just done that every 3 months, every 6 months for the duration of the season, I'd be sitting on 50 to 100 doors that's just cash flowing. And I can, you know, sell that off and put it into a bigger unit, you know, 200 units. Those are things I didn't know. I didn't have anybody telling me these things. I had people telling me, hey, just make sure you save your money, keep it in the bank, you know, 0.01% interest. Yay. So excited about that. But I didn't have those. And I didn't come from much. I came from a family who was just grinders. It just worked. And, you know, we were, I don't say poor, because we weren't poor. Like, we had what we needed. We were lower middle class, and my parents grinded and worked for what they had, but I didn't have anybody to teach me. And so I wanted to give that to guys, whether they're just coming out of high school or they're going into college baseball, or college football, or they just got drafted and they just made $2 million in a signing bonus. What are you going to do with it? Like, are you just going to go waste it on cool cars and cool things? Or let's set up a plan to where we buy you your first home in a non-taxable state, and then we start rolling that in. After a year, we take the appreciation, we just start buying your rental. So now you don't even have to touch that $2 million other than that initial down payment. And then we just use the bank's money to keep buying you properties. And then by the time you're done with your career, you're sitting on 50 to 100 doors. Or we buy a big complex, we 1031 everything, put into a giant 200 apartment complex somewhere in the country. Now you don't have to do anything. Just go play baseball. Go have fun. Enjoy it. Like, that's what really made me get into real estate, is when I started having those conversations after the game.
How did that conversation come up about real estate?
Yeah. So I just moved to the Valley 2.5 years ago. And my whole goal, like I told my wife, I was like, I'm going to build baseball in the Valley. Like, I'm going to be the guy. There's no other Major League Baseball player here that, you know, there's great coaches in the Valley, but in my mind, there was nobody as good as me and who could teach the way I taught the game, whether it be hitting, defense, pitching. You know, I don't take much credit for pitching because I wasn't a pitcher. So, that was my goal. It was like, I'm going to build baseball. I'm going to build baseball. I'm going to have a facility. I'm going to grow this. And I was like, well, I don't have capital to start any of this. Like, how is this going to get off the ground? Like, do I want to do lessons daily where I'm at the cages from noon to 10 o'clock at night and not see my kids, have dinner with my family? Like, that's living that baseball lifestyle, and I didn't want that anymore. And so I remember being at the pool with my partner Ryan Pina, one of my best friends, and we were just sitting there one day, and Ryan's been doing real estate for 4 years now, kills it, by the way, great mentor. And I remember sitting there with him, and he looked at me one day, he goes, do you really want to do baseball for the rest of your life? And I look back at him, I was like, damn, nobody's ever asked me that. Like, nobody. Like, do you really want to just be stuck in that rat race of, like, finding kids, teaching kids? Like, yeah, I want to give back to the game. I want to give back to the youth, but how can I do that? And so he looked at me, he goes, do you really want to do that? I said, not really. And he goes, do you want to make real money? I said, hell yeah, I want to make real money. And so I remember he goes, okay, I'm a one-man show, and I want to teach you, and I want to bring you on, and I want to start a team around you. And I said, sweet, let's do it. He goes, go get your license, go take the classes, go to school, do what you need to do. So that was that initial conversation with someone, first time someone ever looked at me and said, like, do you just want to do baseball for the rest of your life? Like, do you want to be a lifer?
Yeah, someone challenged you. Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah, and someone that I had just become really close to. Like, I knew Ryan before, because we're both from Southern California, both moved out here to give our kids better lives. And I knew Ryan. We didn't have, like, a super close relationship, but we always played, like, turkey bowl football against each other and sports. And I remember him, when he really challenged me, I was like, this is someone I can learn from. And that circle of five, like, I believe that. Like, the people you surround yourselves is who you're going to become.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, not to, like, bash on anybody, but I always felt like I was the guy trying to bring people with me.
Yes.
Like, hey, I'm going to make it to the major leagues. Like, if you guys want to come along, if you guys want to go on this ride and be successful, like, let's go. If not, peace. Like, I'm going to do it. And it was the first time someone actually challenged me to, like, something I had no idea about. And I was like, damn, like, I might be able to learn something. So we just start initially having conversations, and he's challenged me to this day, and we have a couple other partners that challenge me daily in other parts of business.
What do you see that maybe patterns in baseball that now have became patterns in your real estate business?
Yeah, and I think you can contest to this failure, yeah. Right? Like,
yeah,
we can go out, I can get a client, I could show them 25 houses, and one day they're like, oh, I'm going to use this agent.
Yeah.
Like, that's failure. Like, I felt like I failed. I didn't do my job. And in baseball, you play a game of failure. Like, if you're a Hall of Famer, you fail 7 out of 10 times at the plate.
Wow.
7 out of 10 times, you are getting out. All you have to do is get 3 hits out of 10 at-bats, and you're hitting 300. You're most likely, if you do that over 10 to 12-year period, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. Now, I failed, like, let's call it, like, 95% of the time. And so that's why I was just, like, sporadic through my career. But failure for me is, like, I know how to deal with it. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, cool, I lost out on that deal. Let's go find another one. But how do I turn this into something better?
Yes, yes. And I love that what you said is, like, yes, that happened to you. Yes, that failed. But where am I now going to take that, like, that pain and put it to something that I'm going to go chase again?
Yeah, for sure. I think the biggest thing that I do and that helps me is I fuel my own fire with failure. So, like, if I'm not doing a good job at something, I use that to fuel me to be better, whether it's fitness or my eating habits or fasting or my family, my wife. Like, if I'm failing at being a husband, a father, like, that hurts, and I use that as fuel for my fire to go out and be better. I mean, I think if I constantly do that, like, 10 years from now, I'm going to be right where I want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've learned so many lessons along the way to be able to help those people, right? That used to be like you not know this knowledge, but then also surround yourself with people that do challenge you. And I give you a lot of kudos to that, because I think that's the scary part and where 95% of people don't do that.
Yeah.
They want to be the leader and show all the people below them, like, how great I am. Look at me. Everybody comes to me. But the 5%ers in our society, in our world, are the ones that are now going and being uncomfortable in another group.
Yeah.
And saying, teach me. Like, I'm the sixth person, and, like, I want to learn from you.
Absolutely.
Right?
When I step into a room, I want to be the dumbest person in the room.
Yes.
I don't want to lead the pack, because I feel like if I'm leading the pack, I'm not growing. I'm not learning. I want to be the least knowledgeable. I want to be the stupidest person in the room, because there's 5 other people that know way more than me, that make way more money than me. And not saying that money is everything, but wealth is a tool of freedom. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you can use wealth to do whatever you want. I don't need shiny toys. I've had those.
Yeah.
I don't need those. What I need is freedom, and I need time to spend with my family. And the only thing that gives you that is money. But yeah, I think that 5%, when you surround yourself with those people and you really have people pushing you, man, you look at things way differently. Because when I was on top, hanging out with all my buddies that I grew up with, like, oh, I'm the big dog, but I'm not growing. I'm in stale. Like, I'm just getting stale here, sitting here. And then I don't evolve as a human being. I don't evolve as a dad, as a businessman, as a coach. Like, I need to evolve to continually to be better, mm-hmm. for not just for me, but for my clients, for the people I coach, for my friends, for my family, for my wife. Like, I need to be better every single day.
Yeah. How do you think that kind of goes, I'm going to say, against the societal norms of, like, because what you're describing right now is that personal development.
Yeah.
And it's something that, you know, not a lot of people do. And I think that's why, you know, one of my missions on this podcast is showing people, like, the actionable items to do that and figure things out. But for that, like, you have that mindset, you have that drive, but, like, what makes you continuing to come back? Because there are failures, there are negative things, but we still have to combat ourselves for those. Like, how do you still bring the positivity in your world? Know that, hey, I lost out on this client, but there is going to be more. Is it just your mindset? Like, what actually encompasses that personal growth for you?
Yeah, I'd say first off, it's definitely my faith. I know all things are possible through God. And so my faith is number one. Like, I lean on that more than anything. And second of all, I'm competitive as shit. Like, I do not want to lose. I don't lose to my kids. I don't lose to my wife. Like, you can ask them. Like, if we play, if it's Sunday fun day and we're playing board games, like, they're all losing and they know it. And if I lose, I'm pissed. But I find ways to tune that back for my kids, but they understand, like, if daddy's playing, daddy's playing to win. And I want to instill that in my kids. Like, my daughter just went from dancing for 5 years and said, I'm not passionate about it anymore. I said, cool, babe. What do you want to do? She goes, I think I want to play volleyball. I said, you ever played? No. I said, you going to work hard? Yeah. Cool. Go get it. Mm-hmm. And so I take the extra time to, like, give her a private lesson with somebody. But I said, like, if you're going to do this, don't lose. Like, be competitive as shit. And she's my one that's not competitive. She's the sweetest, kindest, best soul on this planet. And I want to keep that. But I want her, when she steps on the court, to, like, want to eat somebody. And, like, I want to win. And my middle child, she's got mommy and daddy in her so much, because she's an insane dancer. But the work ethic is, like, I don't have to tell her to go. I had to build a dance studio in my garage just for her, because she wants to work that much. Mm. And she's cutthroat. So I love that. And, you know, it's just different. But, like, you've got to be competitive. Like, if you want to grow and if you want to win, you gotta hate losing more than you like winning.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Like, that's me. And I'm going to find any way, whether it's a bad month in real estate, right? We're in a bad market. Things are crazy. It's a roller coaster. Like, I don't know where my next client's coming, but I'm going to go find one. I'm going to go do what I need to do. I'm going to go do my social media. I'm going to go throw out my blog. I'm going to go throw out my email newsletter every single week. And it's consistency. And that's the number one thing, other than, well, the discipline and the consistency kind of play a part. But through baseball, like, your discipline and your consistency have to be there. You're never going to get to the top. And I learned that at a young age. Like, I had to train every single day. I had to work out every single day. I had to eat right every single day, because if I didn't do those things, there was someone else that was doing them, mm-hmm. and they're going to pass me. And I don't want that.
Right. Right. It's so cool to see these different habits be translated from your baseball career to then now life career.
Yeah.
I want to get back to kind of, like, in your business as a real estate agent, right? We can all chase the money, the clients, all these things. But, like, where does your purpose and kind of your core values of you and your business come in?
Yeah, I've ever since baseball, like, when I got to the big leagues, I would always make sure that my goal was to make sure that someone that paid for me to see me play that day got to see something new, or got to know that I was going out there and giving everything I had that day so they would want to come back. And that's the same thing I do for my clients in real estate. Like, I'm going to go above and beyond for you because I want you to feel that love. Like, I want to help you. And I think if you can bring value to someone's life, that's way more important than a dollar, mm-hmm. right? So if I can bring value to your life, and guess what? When I bring value to someone and I close that deal and I find them their dream home, they're going to refer me, right? And then I can bring value to the next person's life. And it's just a revolving door. So where I can run my business off value and not making a commission. Because I remember getting into the business at first and being like, man, I need to close a deal so I can get paid. Instead of like, no, I'm going to lean into giving someone value and maybe figuring out a pain point in their life and fixing that and helping them get into something that's perfect for them. And then that's where the business starts to pick up, and I start to see me just bringing value to my clients is what has kind of made me double my business this year from last year.
That's awesome. That's cool to see. And we are in a very strange...
Oh, it's a roller coaster.
Very strange market right now. It is. It's a roller coaster. It's a roller coaster of emotions. And sometimes we're not on our... Like, I can attest, sometimes I'm not on my best, you know, like... top, like, I want to give you everything, but I'm like, I'm trying to just give myself everything right now, right? Yeah. And not in a selfish way, but like trying to figure these things out, you know? And it is one of those uphill battles,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And, you know, especially people in our Treasure Valley, let's talk about this actually. A question just popped up in my mind, or maybe kind of how we got connected as well. Being from out of state.
Yep.
I'm from Idaho. Idahoans are some cutthroat people too.
I love it.
But what do you see from being an outsider coming in that Idaho gives you that California was not able to give you?
A lot. Love. I think a lot of people here have big hearts. They're friendly. And I noticed that from the first time I stepped off a plane here is people looked you in the eyes and they said hi. They want to see how you're doing. They checked on you. So love, compassion, you know, just being a neighbor, you know, Idaho is such a family, faith, and just a community, right? Like it's the Treasure Valley is not very big. There's what, 1 million people here? I came from Orange County where there's 3 million people in Orange County. So, you know, people are in the rat race in California. They're stuck on their phones or they're speeding to try to get to work. They're late, this, where Idaho is just, it's calm. And, you know, it's sped up a little bit because of some Californians.
I'm going to say from everywhere. I will always protect the Californians because I'm like, honestly, every single one of them that I've met, I want them here.
Yeah, that's we and everyone I've talked to, all my friends that have relocated, we don't want to change anything. We just want a better place to live. I want to raise my kids in a small town that's filled with love and community and kids getting to play outside by themselves. Like, I want them to grow up the way I grew up. And so when we were looking for a place, that's what we were looking for. And I remember, and we went to Nashville, we went to Dallas. You know, I've lived in different countries. And this was the only place that when my wife, 24 hours in, said, this is home, I was like, let's go. I feel it. But if you feel it, like, I'm on board. And so we went back, sold our house in 11 days, moved out here like 2 months later.
Wow.
Like, there was no looking back. It was, this is where we need to be. This is where we need to raise our kids because we want the values. We want the community. And I think that was the biggest thing for me is community. We have such great relationships here because people are so open. And yeah, you got your, there's people here that don't like Californians. I get it. I wouldn't like people moving into my state that are trying to change it or grow it. And, but what I could say to Idahoans is like most of us, like 99% of us aren't trying to change Idaho. Like we moved here because of what it is, not what's going to happen. Like, and there's going to be evolution. It's going to change. Right, there's going to be more businesses. There's going to be more traffic, which I know sucks. Believe me, traffic sucks. But we just want a better life, and that's what I love about Idaho. Is it gives you that better life. It gives you that small town feel with a little bit of a big city. But man, I love Idahoans. I love them.
I love Idaho. I think one of my biggest frustrations, and I think it comes back to kind of what we talked about today, is like that small-minded perspective where a lot of people, I'm going to say in city council or commissioners, they have been in their seats for, you know, years upon years. They're getting older. This isn't that Idaho that they used to know. Yeah. And they are kind of trying to keep things minimal. Yep. Like the growth minimal. And I, you know, our road systems, that's one of my biggest, like, gosh, like I need to figure out how to get into the commissioners and city council to like really talk about our road systems because it's just so jacked up. Yeah. And it's like, bring these people that are from bigger areas in and learn from them as well. Like, yeah, they're not here to change it in a negative way. Like, they're here, they have different experiences than us that we can lean on, that we can ask them those challenging questions of like, what do we do?
Yeah.
You know, because we only know a lot of the people from Idaho only know Idaho.
Yeah.
Like, they don't go out and explore. Like, you have seen so many different cities, so many different cultures. And that's what it comes down to of like Idaho is like, people are chasing the culture we have.
Yeah.
The loving fostering, the nature, the you're always doing something, but if you just want to hang back, you can too. Like, there is so much diversity in the culture.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, I'm going to say the people. Like, we don't have a lot of diverse people.
Yeah.
But we are getting there. Like, we're 100%. There's a lot more.
This place is growing.
It's growing fast. Yeah.
And, like you said, like the infrastructure, I've seen infrastructure. California's done a terrible job at it. And I think they're trying to do their best to keep up with it. I think you can lean on some people to figure it out faster. like taking Highway 16 and taking it from all the way to Star. Now they're going to take it all the way down to 84. Mm-hmm. Like that needs to be done ASAP. It's a big project. It's going to take time and expanding roads and making sure there's enough roadway for all these cars now. But yeah, I think if you lean on some people that know how to do it, but don't actually take what they do in that state, leave the state the way it is. Just use the ideas and the infrastructure to build a better infrastructure here. I get it. 100%. I'm all about it.
Yeah. What do you think about the growth?
Man.
Now that you're here.
That's a tricky question. Like, Idaho's full. no, like, I love the growth for the aspect of community. You get to have more places to eat, more diverse places to eat. Like, I come from Southern California. Like, I grew up in really close to Santa Ana, California. Some of my best friends were Hispanic, and I've been blessed to eat some of the best Mexican food on the planet. So, you know, shout out to Amano. They do a really good job in Caldwell. Like, my favorite place, hands down. But, like, just getting more diverse food will help this place. And that just comes with growth. And then, you know, it's a tricky question. I would say I like it and I don't like it for the reasons I came here to live part of that small town. And then the business side of me is like, let's let this thing grow, right? Like, I want it to grow, but like grow somewhere further away from than my area. You know, like, I want that small town feel still, but I want growth, but not too much. And I think there's projections of like having another million people here in the next like 10 years, which is crazy, but it is what it is. Like, this place isn't a secret anymore.
Yeah.
And it sucks for locals. I get it. I feel you guys, but the growth I think can be really good. The job growth is going to be really good. Like, I think the median household income was like around 40,000 a couple years ago, and it's already jumped up to like 55,000 in a couple years. And, you know, I would love to see people in Idaho and locals making $100,000 a year off a job, right? Like, everything costs more nowadays. Like, it's just the evolution of life and the years that go on. Like, real estate costs more and food's going to cost more. Inflation happens. But how are we going to take care of our locals, right? Like, we've got to bring job growth. And so I think with more job growth and more people coming here, like, that's going to bring more opportunities to locals and have better. And I get it. Like, if they just want to sit back, like, do your thing.
Right.
I just want to bring love and faith and community here too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's great. And I mean, especially from growing up here, you know, I love it. It's wild. Like, now I almost search for like, what's new? Like, what, you know, like, my whole family lives in Caldwell still. And so coming from Boise to there, it's like, there's a lot that can change in a month's time, you know, of just getting built or things changing. And it's wonderful. It's like, now I search for those new places. Like, what, where can we support? Like, where could we go? What is different? You know, we're not going to the same restaurants that we did when we were kids, right? It was like, you had three local restaurants and that was about it, you know, to be able to choose from. It's like, now we have so many. And the cool part is you hear their stories, why they started it. Like, that all is within the community of helping support each other, cultivate, you know, these fostering relationships of how can I help you? You know, how can I serve you? You're serving our community and bringing that all together. I love that view.
Oh, for sure. I think serving is number one. Like, it's the same thing with our business, right? Like, you want to serve somebody. If I can serve somebody, I'm great. Like, yeah. I feel full.
Yeah. It's the servant's heart where, you know, where you're giving and not expecting anything back.
Yeah.
And it's simpler said than actually done, mm-hmm. because, you know, you almost like do these tallies in your head where it's like, well, I've given you like five times. Like, what are you giving me back? Right.
Oh yeah.
You do that. But there's also this aspect where it's like, you give your gift. You give your knowledge. Yeah. Like, I remember when I worked at Harley Davidson, people were like, well, why are you saying that? I'm like, what are they going to do with my knowledge? Like they're just going to take a tidbit and they're going to move on. And like, nobody's coming after me, right? Yeah. Like nobody's coming after me specific in real estate or this podcast. And if they are, great, that's fine, because I am me and you are you, and there will never be exactly, right? Like that's where the collaboration yeah. comes together, instead of, you know, I know you love competition, but like the coming together versus having the collaboration yeah. versus having like the competition, where it's like, yeah, we both are real estate agents. Your people, who you are serving, is different than who my people are and who I'm serving. And just do a good job, get ideas from them, bounce ideas off each other's heads, and move on.
Yeah, I hate that aspect of like the competition. It's competition no matter what. Like, it's either you find a client or I find a client, but your niche is way different than my niche. And maybe I can learn something from your niche that I can put into my business, or you can learn from me to put into your business. And that's how I go about it. Like, I look at some of the top agents, like, what are they doing really well? And how can I feed off that? Like, I look at Matt Bauscher. Everybody knows mm-hmm. Matt from being a Boise State basketball player mm-hmm. and then playing over in Europe. Like, how did he use that for his advantage? Well, I'm an athlete. Mm-hmm. How can I use that for my advantage? Matt's mm-hmm. the biggest agent in the Valley. Like, we all know that.
Yeah.
Now, how can I piggyback off something that he's done early on in his career to help him grow? Like, that's how I look at it. I look at collaboration and competition as one in its own. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to not say like, Matt, I love you, but I'm coming for you. Like, that's my goal.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, if he wants to teach me something, or if I have something to teach him, like, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the beautiful thing about this, is that you maybe there's a training, right? You're putting yourself in that room to learn from them. I know Matt does a lot of teaching, which is super wonderful, because it's also like, hey, I have the knowledge. I'm willing to give it to, I'm going to say, the younger version of me, which is us, in wanting to help you. Like, there's not a lot of people out there that I specifically know that are like, nope, I'm not going to talk to you because I'm afraid of you.
Oh, yeah.
There are a handful of people. There's some people out there like that.
There's a million agents in the Valley. There's a plenty of them.
Yes. But I think it's that, like, willingness to one learn and willingness to also teach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I think a lot of those people that want, they want it for themselves. They don't want to share it. And I feel like the people that share it get more.
Yes.
Easily.
Because absolutely.
There's more resources. There's more people. There's people that are pushing them now to be even better, because now they got to look even better, or they got to go find a deal. I think that greediness plays a big part in this industry, because everybody wants something from themselves. Like, yeah. I want to do $500,000, or I want to do $10 million in sales this year. Or I want to hit $1 billion. Like, great. It's great to have those goals. But if you're pushing other people at the same time, like, you're going to get there because you're giving back.
Right.
I live by that. Like, give back and it's going to come tenfold.
Absolutely. And that is, I mean, that's very difficult. I know the first team that I got onto, you know, in real estate, like, whoo, did I learn a lot, right? Like, there's so much that I learned. I'm going to say more not to do than to do. And, you know, it's a learning curve. Like, you just have to take that mindset and be like, hey, I gathered this information. Now I go to my next endeavor, and these are the things, you know, I'm going to watch for, and these are the things that I look out for. And, you know, that's all you can ask of yourself as well.
Yeah, just grind it out.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to learn. I've been fortunate enough to be in business with one of my best friends. Like, is there downfalls? Yeah. Like, we just feed off each other, though. Like, we're two different people. Like, I'm the goofy, outgoing kind of one. He's more a little introvert, unless he's talking to clients and doing his thing. But he's business oriented. Like, he's going after it. And I love that about him. And I'm trying to feed that, some of that, into me, where I kind of let him loose a little bit. Where, like, at Amherst, like, I remember going over there for the first time, everybody's dressed in a suit or like mm-hmm. dressed super nice. I come in walking like this, like, yo, this is me. Like, I'm coming in with ripped jeans, a hoodie on, like, I'm not trying to be someone I'm not.
Right.
Because if I'm trying to be someone else, like, I can't bring my value to the table.
Yeah.
And then I'm just faking it.
Right.
And I don't want to fake it. Like, I just want to be me and live my life and give the best to my clients. And if a client wants me to wear a suit and tie every day, like, sorry, I'm probably not the right guy for you. Now, if I'm going to sell a $3 million house, of course I'm going to put on a blazer and some nice looking pants and some shoes, but I don't live my day-to-day life like that. So yeah. I'm going to give you what you see.
Yeah.
Face value.
And you know what? It's actually crazy because I will boast a little bit where there has been multiple homes over that $1 million mark that I have not been in a dress or like high heels. There was one, she called me and I was like, cool. Like, I'm literally in my gym outfit. Right. And it's you showing that dedication to them and they love that.
Yeah.
Like those people, like the $1 million doesn't change them from being humans.
No.
And honestly, so many of those people above that price range want that. Like, they're craving that authenticity of like, you know what? I actually don't need you in like really dressed up, because that doesn't. I think there's a professionalism to it, but I think there's also, like you said, the authenticity to it as well,
yeah.
Where it's like you're providing that value. You're giving them the knowledge. You're helping them out. You're being that servant. And you know what, if you're wearing jeans that day, I'm pretty sure they're not going to be like, well, you're not the agent for me.
Yeah, like I remember my first deal of the year was a $3.6 million house, and I showed up with jeans rolled up with Vans on, and I had a white tee and a blazer. Like, that's me. Like, that's me getting dressed up. Like, and I feel like I look good. Like, I give kudos to myself. I think I look good. And so, you know, I walk in with my client and he doesn't care. Like, he's there to get a deal done on a house that was way more than $3.6 million. And we got him the deal done. Like, at the end of the day, if you get them what they want, they really don't care what you look like. Now, there might be a few, but
I think there's a few. And I think there's also like a standard you set for yourself, right? Like, if I know I'm going to an appointment like that, like, yeah, you get yourself ready. There's different things that happen. And, you know, it's pretty simple, but like on the day to day, like they also realize like you're a human too. Like you are juggling so many different things, so many different avenues. And like, they just want you to be a good human really at the end of the day.
For sure. And I think, you know, like you said, like if I'm going on a first meeting with someone that's trying to buy a $1 to $2 million house, of course I'm going to look good. Like, I'm not going to show up in sweatpants or ripped jeans. Like maybe a little hole here and there, 'cause that's my style. But, I'm going to look professional. It's just my own professional style. Like, I don't need to have this guy's style or that guy's. Like, I'm me.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring my value to you.
Yeah.
And I think people like that.
Yeah. I wish more people had that stance of, like, knowing who the hell they were, right? Because I say this because, like, as a male, yes, you look very trendy, but, like, I wouldn't say that, like, you're following the trends. And I think so many people follow the trends and then you can watch them follow the next trend and then the next trend. And you're like, well, why are you doing that? And they're like, I don't know. It's like, what's trendy?
Trying to be hip.
Yeah.
I'm a dad of three daughters. Like, they'll tell me if I don't look cool. Like, that's very easy. I walked out one day and my daughter's like, you're wearing that? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to the gym, babe. It's not that big of a deal. And so I mean, they give me accountability too. So it's, yeah, I just know who I am now because I've been through struggles. I've had to figure out who I am away from the game, and I'm just a dad who loves his family, who wants to provide, and I want to bring value. Like, that's whether it's to baseball players or my clients in real estate or some of the other ventures we have going. Like, I just want to bring value.
Yeah, I love that. I love how simplistic that is, because I think we overcomplex it way too often.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with my family. Like, my wife is everything to me. My kids are the second best thing. Like, my wife becomes before anything. And then I pour that rest of it all into my kids. And if I could bring that value to them, like, I can go out and do whatever I want. Like, I can go conquer the world because I feel like that love is reciprocated. They're pushing me to be a better human being because I got to provide them with value every single day. And if I can do that consistently, man, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, yeah. I love the fulfillment where it's like, it's not the money, it's not the time, it's just like you being a servant and fulfilling your life.
Like, yeah. It's, and I think that comes from I've had the money before and I didn't have the fulfillment because I was spending it on stupid toys or Louis Vuitton this and Louis Vuitton that or cars or, and stuff. Like, at the end of the day, like, I look back and I'm like, what did that bring me? Did that give me joy? Like, did that fulfill me? And I look at it now, like I said, like, money's just a tool for freedom. And that freedom's gonna give me more time with my family. That's the only reason I chase money. And it's not to spend it on cool things, but it's to give my kids more time with me. Now, if I set my business up right, it takes care of itself. I make money and I get to spend all that time with them and pour into my wife and be the best husband I can so she can feel loved and the center of attention and number one in my life.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, Brandon, as we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to tell the listeners today?
Yeah, we've got a new business venture. Look out for it. It's called How's My Teen Driver. You can go to, it's necessarily to save teens' lives because the number one killer of teens right now is car crashes. And we are doing something really special, a little QR code. It's a $20 down and then $8 a month. You get a QR code. It's linked up to your license plate for your kids. And we call everybody out on the road guardians. So look out for it. You can go on the website. You can use my link, howsmyteendriver.com/forwardbb, and just save a life. Like, that's what this is about. And, you know, trying to bring value. I try to bring value in everything I do. And big thing is I have kids. I have a daughter who's going to be driving in the next year and a half. Whoa. Super scary. I've already bought it for her. So it's ready, waiting for her. She doesn't know yet. She might be a little pissed, but whatever. But go check it out because it's all about saving teens' lives and just saving everybody on the road. That's the biggest thing I want to give out right now is just, like, save a life, bring value.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. And listeners, all of his information will be in the show notes for you. For this, I just also want to remind you, like, if you want to come onto the podcast, share what your story is, please reach out to me. I always love new guests coming on. And for that, have a wonderful day, guys. Bye. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Raw Thoughts Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think would be interested in this. You can also head over to my website at rawthoughtspodcast.com and see any other guests that have been on the episodes. You could also go over to Instagram and follow at rawthoughts.podcast. I would really appreciate it, and always send me a message if you're interested in being a guest or any feedback.